You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Measured to Alexander-Arnold. Liverpool on the move again. Deflected it in! And Liverpool's lightning quick start, rewarded by the early goal. And it's scored by the England defender, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Liverpool 1, AC Milan. Mo Salah, Divock Origi. Mo Salah in for Liverpool. Big moment! Liverpool corner, headed away by Benacer. Henderson! Oh, what a super strike from the Liverpool captain, Jordan Henderson! His first goal in the Champions League for 7 years, and you can't hit them any sweeter than that! Liverpool 3, AC Milan 2, it's an opening night classic!
So Liverpool come from behind to win a Champions League game against AC Milan. Pretty familiar storyline, isn't it? On this Red Agenda Extra, we're going to look at match day one and also Klopp's need for rotation with his squad as well. James Pearce alongside myself, Steve Hovers. So we'll also check out James's piece on whatever happened to Loris Karius. Let's start with the Champions League. And I want to start with Jordan Henderson's goal. For me, I don't know about yourself, James, that was the moment of the night. And the piece you've written on The Athletic, which people should check out, you put Gerrard-esque for his goal. I think a lot of people immediately thought, ooh, Olympiakos, what a strike. What a moment for the captain.
Yeah, brilliant. I think when you think it, I think you have to go back to Ludogorets away in 2014 for his last Champions League goal. So he will certainly feel that he was due one. A sensational strike. And it's been interesting, isn't it? Especially on the back of Fabinho scoring at Leeds last weekend, and then Henderson delivering the decisive blow against Milan. You know, the goals from midfield have been an issue for Liverpool in recent years. So hopefully that bodes well for the months ahead, because it is important that you're not just reliant on the same old faces to come up with the goals. And it was just one of those moments that I think everyone will remember for a long, long time, because you could see what it meant to Jordan Henderson. He's had a pretty tough 12 months with especially with the groin surgery and having to fight back from that. And it was a real outpouring of emotion when that ball hit the net.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. The emotion that went round. You see it on his face. I mean, it was phenomenal, even from the main stand, and he was facing that way. It was almost like that was the culmination of an awful lot of things for him. And obviously, it was an emotional night anyway, wasn't it, under the Anfield lights?
Yeah. I mean, it was, I'd love to know what was going through his head during that celebration. It crossed my mind whether a little bit of it was also, you know, what he went through over the new contract in terms of the uncertainty there, that there was a good period in the summer where, clearly what was on the table, it wasn't acceptable to him. And I think obviously after everything he's given the club over the last decade, that was probably a disappointment to him. Thankfully, as we've talked about previously, Jurgen Klopp got involved and that was resolved. So I think, for Jordan Henderson to just, I think, that moment, not that I think most people needed it, but maybe some just to remind them about what an elite midfielder he still is and how he can make, game defining contributions. And he certainly did that. And it was, especially in the context of the group as well. When you look at the other game finishing goalless, that was, a really, really in important goal for Liverpool. It's put them in a very strong position already in the group.
brilliant night, but obviously a night that had its blips as well. Let's start with team selection and the fact that Jurgen rotated things. And I don't think many of us going to the game or thinking about what was going to happen with that team would have nailed the 11 that Jurgen Klopp put out there. So Virgil van Dijk not playing, and obviously afterwards Jurgen said, you know, we've got to look after him. But you're not thinking, and I don't think AC Milan are thinking, that Liverpool aren't going to play Virgil van Dijk against us.
No, 100%. I think, especially on the back of what Klopp had said the previous day in his press conference, which was, you know, this is the toughest group he's faced as Liverpool manager. You know, there are no gimmies. You know, it's going to be incredibly competitive from the first minute to the last minute. And I think he was genuine when he said that. So, yeah, I think it was a big surprise. I thought if he was going to rest either of the two centre-backs, it was more likely to be Matip rather than Van Dijk.
Given his injury record as well.
Yeah. But then, you know, I think maybe we may see Matip given a breather at the weekend. Of course, you know, as well as Konate waiting in the wings, you've got Nat Phillips as well. So he's gone from one extreme to the other, really, hasn't he, compared to what he was faced with for much of last season. And now, you know, he's got five senior centre-backs there. So, yeah, I think it was a gamble. I think to give Van Dijk the night off and obviously Sadio Mane and Thiago got a breather as well. But it paid off. And I think there's been a huge amount of talk and discussion about whether Liverpool do have sufficient depth for this season. And I think the jury's still out on that. I don't think it'd be wrong to make any sweeping judgments based on one game, but that was the most pleasing thing for me, the fact that, you know, Joe Gomez came in 90 minutes under his belt. You know, that was really important, you know, a massive step forward for him. You know, of course there was, you know, a little bit of rust at times, especially, you know, I think Liverpool undoubtedly wouldn't have conceded those two goals just before half time if Van Dijk had been out there. I think communication and organization was an issue during those crazy few minutes, but yeah, I'm sure Gomez will kick on from here. You know, great for Keita to get more minutes. Henderson as well, who hasn't, you know, hadn't obviously started the game at Leeds, and then Divock Origi, who you know, that was probably the one individual I was probably most happy for on the night, because, you know, he gets so much stick, Divock Origi. I think, you know, he it's been written off so many times. And I thought for someone who's played very little football, that was a very impressive performance from him.
I mean, he didn't have the option or the ability to showcase himself many times last season, Divock Origi. And of course, we spent a lot of the summer then talking about the fact that maybe he could be one of the make-weights, one of the players that could leave the club. But really interesting quote from Jurgen Klopp, talking about the fact that no one really came in with a proper offer for him. It got me thinking, what is a proper offer for Divock Origi? Did no one at all even inquire about this player?
Inquiries, yes, but no proper bids. I think what Klopp was referring to, and what by that you're talking, you know, 12, 15 million pound minimum, I think Liverpool would have been looking to do business at. You know, when you look at his age and what he's achieved already, you know, I think it would have been crazy to have even thought about offloading him for less than that. And I thought Klopp was very honest, saying, you know, we expected him to leave. We thought that offers would come in, and that, you know, and that clearly Divock Origi would have the chance to go and be a regular starter somewhere else, and that he would probably want to grasp that chance. But I think that was something that people missed a bit in the summer when, you know, there was a lot of talk that, you know, we talked about it on the podcast, didn't we, that Shaqiri going was never going to lead to Liverpool just going and buying another attacker. We said, you know, I think it would take Origi to have to go as well for there to be a real space there that Liverpool feel that they have to fill. And, you know, on the back of that, Origi probably got a lot of stick with people assuming, well, he's dragging his heels, he doesn't want to go, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, accept that he's going to have to maybe earn less money elsewhere. But the reality was there was never ever a deal on the table that Liverpool would have even considered anyway. It wasn't Divock Origi, you know, dragging his heels. It was just the reality, I think, of the COVID affected transfer market. And, you know, and I know Klopp said obviously people don't watch enough football, he said. I think that was probably a little bit tongue in cheek, because you know, you'd have had to have delved pretty deep to try and find footage of Divock Origi in the second half of last season, because, you know, he hadn't you know, Wednesday night was his first start in all competitions since West Ham away in January. So, you know, by dropping so far down the pecking order last season, you know, it meant he was almost out of sight, out of mind, I think, for a lot of clubs who would have been potentially in for him. But, you know, I saw a lot of the things from Origi, you know, last night that I think we've missed probably for, you know, 18 months, it feels like. You know, the aggression, I thought he too often, when he played last season, he was too passive. You know, he's a laid-back guy, which I think, you know, can be a blessing in moments like when he's sweeping home that quickly taken corner from Trent Alexander-Arnold against Barcelona. You know, ice cool under big pressure. But there's other times when, you know, you almost want, you know, a rocket up his backside to get him going. And because, you know, with Divock Origi, the frustration is that you kind of know the qualities are there. So yeah, that I thought he put himself about. He shut down. He pressed. He set the tone on that front. He forced mistakes. He linked play well. And then there was, you know, an absolutely exquisite assist for Mo Salah early in the second half with that scoop pass. And yeah, I'm not surprised he was hampered by cramp after an hour, and obviously got a breather. But yeah, it was great. You know, he was. I think, you know, even tweeting about how well he played, you know, I was inundated with people, you know, either abusing me or Divock Origi or both, because I think so many people have made up their minds about him and won't be budged from that. But I think it was telling that, you know, 50-odd thousand people inside Anfield gave him a standing ovation when he walked off. And yes, part of that is because what he's done for the club previously, he'll always be adored because of those iconic goals. But I think it was also, you know, fans wanting to show their appreciation for the fact that someone who's been through a really tough period, because, you know, he won't have enjoyed being stuck on the periphery, not even making the bench for the last three games. But, you know, when his chance came along, you know, I it felt like, do you know what? You know, Divock Origi, he's rekindled his Liverpool career a few times previously. And if he keeps on that vein, he'll do so again.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I just worry that, and you called it a gamble with the team selection, I just worry that there aren't too many match days. I don't just mean Champions League, I mean Premier League. League Cup is probably where we'd see it, where actually Jurgen can gamble with the team. There aren't really many of those where Divock is going to get that opportunity from minute one. Am I unfair saying that?
No. I think that's fair. But I think what you want is... You want to have that reassurance, and I'm sure Klopp does as well, that when he does need to turn to him, that the drop off in quality compared to the players ahead of him in the pecking order, that drop off is not too vast. And I think that was the problem last season, that when Origi did come on, he wasn't able to affect games, he wasn't able to make a contribution, he was a bit of a passenger. And then that obviously, then the alarm bells are ringing, where you think, well, hang on a minute, you know, it's Liverpool have already lost Firmino for a few weeks to a hamstring injury this season. You know, imagine if they lost another one of the attackers. You know, Minamino, jury's still very much out on him after, you know, a mixed loan spell at Southampton in the second half of last season. You know, hasn't featured since he's come back this time around. So, yeah, I think, you know, no one expects Divock Origi to start 20-odd games this season. You just need him to be, you know, an impact sub, really.
He's got to be ready, hasn't he? He's got to be ready to be involved.
And you know, an impact sub, someone who's there when, you know, potentially, you know, Jota, you know, maybe when he needs a breather. You just want that belief that you can rotate and there isn't too much of a drop in the class levels. And the reality is that when Origi performs like he did last night, you know, he is a very, very good fifth choice attacker, which is essentially his role in that squad behind, you know, Salah, Mane, Firmino and Jota. You know, it's there, it's all there. He's got, you know, when you look at him physically and, you know, and you know what a fantastic athlete he is, and you know, that's the frustration, that you almost know it's there, you just want to see it more often from Origi.
I thought Jota's work rate was exceptional last night, absolutely unbelievable. But for me, the man who stood out more than anyone was Fabinho, who, you know, man of the match against Leeds, just seems to have this ability to keep going up another level all the time.
Yeah. You almost run out of superlatives to describe Fabinho. I don't think there's anyone who comes close to him in terms of, you know, I'd say not just in the Premier League, but in European football, in terms of that role in front of the back four as a defensive shield. And, you know, I just thought he was so crucial to, you know, breaking up those attacks. You know, he just reads the game so well, always in the right place, always uses the ball wisely, and keeps Liverpool on the front foot. And, you know, Klopp said himself, when Liverpool lost their way towards the back end of that first half, it was, you know, they almost, you know, because the back line dropped too deep, they just left. It was almost like, you know, they left Fabinho with, you know, he's incredible, but, you know, come on, you can't give him that amount of space to try and cover. I thought there was, you know, I thought there was loads of positives on the night. With, you know, I thought Keita probably tired a bit, but I thought Keita was a really good first half. You know, Henderson probably after a bit of a slow start to the season, you know, getting back to the levels that we all know and expect. And, you know, and Curtis Jones, I thought, very lively when he came on for the last 20 minutes, making his first appearance of the season. And, you know, probably with the rise of Harvey Elliott and all the hype around him, of course, you know, probably Curtis has been overlooked a little bit. But I think, you know, that was a timely reminder from him that he, you know, he will have a big part to play as well.
I love Klopp's explanation on Liverpool losing their way. He almost said that happened because they were playing too well, which is brilliant, isn't it? It sort of contradicts itself, but it's true in a way. But before you knew it, Liverpool were behind after two absolutely insane minutes. And I suppose credit to AC Milan as well, you know, that the first, they finished the move properly. But there was some concern about the space between Matip and Trent.
Yeah. I think we've seen it many times before, haven't we, where it's a game's almost so one-sided that the team in the ascendancy just clocks off. It's almost like it felt like it was almost too easy. It was like, you know, you get the early goal. I mean, I saw some crazy stat that Liverpool had 13 attempts on goal in the first 15 minutes. And, you know, and then you had Mo Salah. You know, I blame Kiva O'Neill for that missed penalty, having done an extensive piece on an hour. He never misses, stretching back 4 years, and then 17 in a row bites the dust. No, it was. But even that, you know, I think no one inside Anfield at that point thought, "Oh, it's not going to make any difference, this missed penalty," because it's like the Alamo. This, it's just wave after wave, and you know, an AC Milan, you know, they aren't. It's great to see AC Milan back at the Champions League table and competing with Europe's elite again. But they're not anything like the AC Milan of old, are they? You know, it's a very youthful team. And I think certainly in that opening 30, 35 minutes, I think they were intimidated by their surroundings because, the atmosphere was absolutely electric. You know, I think everyone was desperate to make up for lost time, having, you know, what was it, been probably 18 months since we had a European night under the lights at Anfield. I think it was, you know, it was almost like that, you know, it's going to happen. Liverpool will just get the second, the third, probably a fourth, and just blow Milan away. They hadn't been troubled. And then, lapses in concentration. Yeah, and like I said before, I just don't think they happen when you've got Van Dijk out there. But it's been a long time since Gomez and Matip played together. And yeah, there was, you know, of course you could pick major holes in the runners not being tracked, and you know, pretty shambolic the two goals Liverpool conceded. But you know, I think what really impressed me was the fact there was no hangover from that, from absolute minute one of the second half. They were at right bang on it, and you could see that Klopp had clearly addressed those tactical issues during the break. And I never really felt the outcome was any doubt after that. I think, you know, once Salah got Liverpool back level, it was, you know, it was just a case of when that winning goal was going to arrive.
Yeah, mentality, attitude was absolutely spot on. Just going back to the missed penalty, it was a bit crazy, really, because I thought the AC Milan keeper had displayed himself as something of a loose cannon up to that point. So I don't think anyone in the ground was thinking he's going to save this against Mo, who is superhuman, and then shows that he's actually just human with that. It was a terrific save.
Yeah, it was. It was, yeah. I mean, Salah went for power, didn't he, I think, as opposed to placement. And yeah, the keeper guessed right. Credit to him, and he was very alert then to deny. I think it was Jota, wasn't it, with the flying header from the follow up. So, but no, I think it was important for Salah, the fact that, you know, then he went on and scored and contributed to a crucial win, because you wouldn't want that penalty miss to impact on his mentality or belief in any way. So yeah, it was so much to admire about that performance. You know, I wouldn't be too hard on them for those crazy few minutes before half time. It was just great to see how they regained their composure and got back, you know, right in AC Milan's faces again in that second half.
And we spoke about Jordan's response to his goal, and actually at the end of the match, you know, smile like the Mersey on his face, but also the emotion was coming out of Jurgen Klopp, and he went back to the old trademark fist pump at the end. Very indicative, I think, of what the win meant to him, the attitude, but also the competition and nights like that at Anfield.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk about how much fans have missed that and what a void it's left in their lives. It's certainly left a huge void in Klopp's life as well. I think, you know, he talked about being lonely, didn't he, or feeling lonely. I think it was actually when Crystal Palace came to town in his first season with fans leaving early. And I think it's fair to say he felt pretty lonely at Anfield for most of last season when week after week you're walking out in front of empty stands. Because I think, you know, and it became almost, you know, other rival fans kind of scoffed at it a bit, this idea that, oh, you know, Liverpool are suffering from behind closed doors games more than most. But it was true, because anyone who has seen Liverpool under Klopp and seen the success that they've enjoyed, they know it's a very emotional brand of football. It's, you know, a key part of it is the way that, you know, the players feed off the energy from the stands and vice versa. And, you know, when you don't have that, I just don't think, you know, Liverpool could ever be the same force. And, you know, and of course, then when you throw into the hat an unprecedented injury crisis, you know, there were some pretty grim struggles for Klopp last season. And, you know, he certainly had to dig deep himself to, you know, to ensure that Liverpool still salvaged something from such a troubled season with Champions League qualification. So, yeah, you could see how much he loved that, because that was, there's also no doubt that game, can you imagine that game in front of, you know, 50 odd thousand empty seats? It just wouldn't have been the spectacle that we saw.
It doesn't happen, does it, like that?
No. The tempo and the intensity that Liverpool hit Milan with, you just can't replicate that in you know, without supporters, without that soundtrack. So, I think you could tell Klopp was absolutely buzzing off that. I mean, it was a great moment when the cameras captured where Thiago was just about to come on when Henderson scored, and Klopp's celebration was basically to lift Thiago off his feet for a few seconds. And so Klopp back to throwing fist pumps in front of the Kop. And I think as well, also, he knows in the context of the group, that's a big win, because, you know, he was talking afterwards about, you know, really AC Milan, pot four, is that, you know, is that really what we've been given from pot four? Because, you know, usually from pot four, you're talking about, you know, a European minnow that's just happy to be in the competition. And I think, despite, you know, yes, they were a bit naive at times, Milan, but I think they will cause problems for Porto and Atletico. So yeah, I think that will prove to be, you know, a very valuable 3 points, and I think that was another reason why Klopp was so animated after.
Also, that lovely moment where the ball had gone a bit flat on the pitch, it's rolled to Klopp, and I'm thinking, what other manager then turns round and throws the ball into the crowd? But he actually enjoyed doing it, and of course, it led to a bit of a mad scramble. That it's like when you go to see a concert and they throw something, you know, off the stage. It was brilliant, just a way of connecting with the crowd, the audience. But he enjoys that as much as the crowd do.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think, you know, again, it's about seeing the crowd as such a key component. It's not for Klopp. It's not like they're not an audience that are just there to be entertained. It's like no. If you're coming along to a game at Anfield, you've actually got a part to play in the outcome. You know, you can influence this result. You know, you don't just, you know, at some clubs, we won't name any, you do get, you know, a lot of fans who are there, you know, to just to sample the occasion and take photos and sit back in silence. But that's not what Klopp wants from any Liverpool supporter. And yeah, that kind of engagement is typical of the way that he sees the fans as absolutely integral.
Shout out to the AC Milan fashion director who had Stefano Pioli in his suit with white trainers. And in fact, a few of them on. It's not going to catch on Merseyside.
I've seen you wearing that now in Heswell suit.
Absolutely brilliant. Right, check James's piece out on that. It's on The Athletic right now, but also a piece he's written on Loris Karius, Liverpool's fourth choice keeper. It's barely believable, the story. And I think the piece is essentially unfortunate or his own worst enemy. Obviously, the low of Kiev proved a step he could never come back from. What has he just been unfortunate when you've deep dived into this? Is he a really good keeper, or something critically gone wrong here on the journey for him?
Do you know what? It's such a sad story more than anything. It's when you think about where he was. I think he was still only 22 when he made that move from Mainz to Liverpool, and then to find yourself playing in a Champions League final. You know, the absolute pinnacle for any professional at such a young age. And and I think off the back of what happened in Kiev and of course the debate will rumble on, you know, to what degree was he affected by that elbow from, you know, Sergio Ramos, and all we know for certain is that, you know, medical professionals in Boston were absolutely adamant that he had been concussed. But I think the sad thing is he hasn't been able to leave that behind. That it's, you know, what is it, you know, getting on for 3.5 years on, and sadly he is still defined by that night. You know, it was. I think, you know, I spoke to a lot of people in Germany and in Turkey and people at Liverpool as well, ex-teammates, current teammates, and I think there's a whole range of factors. I don't think there's any one particular explanation for why Karius's career has gone the way it has done. I think there is definitely a large degree of misfortune when, you know, things like, you know, certainly I think he was unfairly treated at Beşiktaş, where, yes, he made some, you know, glaring mistakes at times, but he also, you know, put in some very good performances for them. But I think, you know, they didn't want to keep him. And I think they were keen to try and create a situation where it was almost like, you know, keeping him was no longer an option, because, you know, that if he'd played a certain number of games and they'd been, you know, particularly successful, they would have been obligated to buy him for £7.25 million, and they did not want, you know, that kind of financial commitment. And you know, you had a situation where he wasn't even paid for 3 or 4 months, and that's bound to impact on a player's, you know, kind of, you know, your mindset and everything else. So, you know, 2 years in Turkey, that in the end he ended up cancelling the loan and, you know, back to square one. And then, of course, you know, he went to Union Berlin a year ago, and you think, well, that's perfect for him. You know, you know, new to the Bundesliga. You know, it's, you know, a lot less, you know, scrutiny. But he couldn't even get a game. You know, I think he made four Bundesliga appearances in total. You know, it was, but again, you speak to people there and they say, well, the coaching staff never said anything critical of him. He trained well, but you know, for whatever, you know, he joined after the other keeper, Luther, I think his name is, who'd already, you know, basically impressed the manager. So then he had to be patient. But it was, you know, it's, you just think, how does this happen? How do you go from starting a Champions League final to being second choice behind a free transfer from Augsburg, you know, a few years later? And of course, you know, Union Berlin didn't want to keep him. So then you had a situation this summer where he could have gone to Basel this summer. But, you know, Liverpool were prepared to do that deal, but Karius couldn't agree personal terms. Basel came back and said, you know, well, what about a loan? But Karius wasn't prepared to sacrifice a small chunk of his salary, which, you know, again, anyone I spoke to at Liverpool...
It's understandable, James, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, not, I don't know too many people that would happily take a new job with less money. And I don't see why football should be treated any differently than other professions. So I can understand that. The only thing I would say, the caveat to that, is Karius is a free agent next summer. And I just think, in the grand scheme of things, I'm surprised that he wasn't advised, or he didn't decide himself, do you know what, you know, Basel, I could go to Basel this season. Yes, I might earn less money in the short term, but you know, it's a chance to be a number one. It's a chance to rekindle a career that's gone alarmingly off track. Because, you know, the reality is, by staying at Liverpool, he isn't going to play any football between now and January. You know, and so then, you know, then you're in a situation then when he's played, what, four games in 18 months or something stupid? And then that obviously massively reduces his chances of getting any decent offers next summer when he is a free agent. So yeah, I think, you know, he's obviously had, you know, it's been kind of well documented that he's had issues in his private life as well. You know, it's been some have suggested that maybe he's lost a bit of focus on the back of that. And I think the other thing with Karius that, you know, kind of when you judge him, when you try and work out how far he's fallen, you like, I think it depends how high you think he reached in the first place, because, you know, I think, you know, what you have to be honest about is there were serious doubts about Karius before Kiev. It wasn't like we're talking about an Alisson-type commanding figure who then had a meltdown in Kiev. It was, you know, unfortunately, you know, I think back to both legs against Roma when, you know, there was glaring errors then. You know, even back to the nerves in his first season at Liverpool when, I don't know if you remember, Steve, that game against Sunderland at Anfield when he took a goal kick and knocked it straight out for a corner.
Yes.
You know, I've never seen that anywhere at any level of football, either before or since. So, you know, I think he did struggle with the pressure and expectation of life at Liverpool long before Kiev. And one of his old coaches at Mainz said to me, he thinks in the grand scheme of things, it was a big mistake leaving Mainz so young, that he would have been much better off staying put for another year or two in surroundings that were a lot, you know, more forgiving. You know, I think there was a quote from Karius I found where he said, you know, when he was at Mainz, if you made a mistake, you know, people would come up to you afterwards and say, no, well, never mind, you know, just put it right next week. And of course, compare that to, you know, the reaction when, you know, I think back to the error he made that cost Liverpool the game at Bournemouth away. And, you know, it's just so different.
He lives with you, doesn't it, at Liverpool?
Yeah,
never goes away.
You know, and it's, you know, it's on every radio, you know, it's on every sport radio station. It's picked to pieces on, you know, on Sky and BT and, you know, by people like us on podcasts. And so it's, you know, you need to be a certain person, I think, to be able to handle all of that scrutiny. And, but yeah, it's a real shame compared to, you know, where he was at to where he's at now, which is essentially, you know, he's had a shoulder injury where Liverpool now have let him spend some time back home in Berlin. I think he's due back shortly. But yeah, there's no hope of him clambering above either Kelleher or Adrian in terms of the backup to Alisson.
You've got to remember how highly he was rated, but also as well, the pain he suffered actually led to Liverpool signing Alisson, without whom they don't win the Premier League and the Champions League. So actually, that bizarrely, his misery has contributed to Liverpool's success in the years that followed. Look, we'll move away from him to Harvey Elliott. We'll finish the pod on this one. There's a chance, but it's an outside chance, isn't it, that Harvey actually plays some competitive football at the end of this season. But having had the surgery on his ankle, I would imagine being told that you might play at the end of the season is an absolute psychological winner for the youngster.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, from the people I've spoken to, I don't get the impression that's just like a carrot being dangled to try and spur him on with his rehab. I think there is a genuine confidence that he can play again before the end of the season. I know Liverpool said they weren't going to put a timescale on it, because I think, you know, obviously all rehabs are different and they don't know, you know all the different stages and all the boxes that need to be ticked along the way. But I think, you know, when you look at players who have suffered similar injuries, you know, Andre Gomes was probably at one end of the scale. The fact that he was back playing within 4 months, wasn't he, which is, you know, crazy. You know, probably more realistically 5 or 6 months. So, you know, we could be looking at, you know, March, April, maybe, you know, when Harvey Elliott is back playing. So, I think he's conducted himself amazingly well. When you think to handle that heartache from being, you know, brought down to earth in such a brutal fashion, from living his dream and, you know, establishing himself in this Liverpool team, to see what he's been putting on social media, and, you know, even the way that he's, you know, been even claiming that the Leeds defender was, you know, should have had his red card overturned, and, you know, it was an accident, no hint of malice or anything on his part, you know, thanking the supporters and his teammates and the staff for all their support that they've shown him. So I think if there's one thing we know about Harvey Elliott, with the way that he's conducted himself so far at Liverpool, we know that he will be absolutely 100% committed to everything the medics and the sports science guys tell him to do, and that will enable him to, I'm sure, to get back, you know, probably a lot quicker than many people are expecting.
Get well soon, Harvey. We can't wait to see you play again. My thanks to James Pearce. That was the Red Agenda Extra. And I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back with another Red Agenda on Monday after another weekend's action. Liverpool against Crystal Palace. So a quick skip back to the Premier League. Fingers crossed for a great, great result. And hopefully you'll take a listen to us then. See you then. Bye-bye.